Okay, there are less than 3 weeks to go before the March 20 Illinois primaries, and we've got politics coming out of our ears, politics in our faces, politics everywhere. We're blinded by ads on TV, radio, politics, politics, politics. So let's talk politics. The way I think it's going, sometimes I feel like chopping off an arm and just giving the flesh to Boss Madigan or J.B. Pritzker. We'll take a leg, and then Kennedy or Biss, Cullerton, the whole crowd, who have one thing in common. They're going to stick us with more taxes. We'll talk about the primaries and more, including Christian McQuarrie's weird dreams, as always, with WGN producer Jeff Garlin and the aforementioned Tribune editorial board member Christian McQuarrie. But first, let me rant a bit, okay? Because I've got to mention that $175 million the city can afford to spend on the construction of the great temple to Barack Obama that we're building on the lakefront. $175 million. Really? It's not even a presidential library. It's a presidential center, which means it's a temple of adoration with a golf course, and not even counting the what? Billions of dollars, hundreds of millions worth of real estate on prime land? What's really a laugh is that poor African Americans who live nearby are told to smile and like it and not worry what'll happen when it's built and they're gentrified and kicked out of their homes so the middle class can enjoy a spiritual moment with the great Barack Obama. And so Rahm Emanuel can hold fundraisers there and Obama can play golf. Have you ever seen an artist's rendering of this thing in the papers? With the column sticking into the sky, like the Jedi Temple from Star Wars. And it's all going to be paid with private donations, except, of course, taxpayers giving up the priceless land and the $175 million we can't afford, and on, and they'll come up with more costs later. They're called change orders or unforeseen expenditures. But at least, you know what? They'll have a gift store, so there'll be a few jobs, and people with smocks will work around and make minimum wage. So that's awesome. And maybe the virtual Obamas can walk around with us, you know, like something out of AI, like that Spielberg movie of a few years ago. And he can talk to us about White Sox players he couldn't remember. And he could tell us about the 57 states that he talked about once and the line in the sand in Syria and how Tony Resco doesn't have a role there. And of course, some will laugh and some will pray because the whole thing is a temple. Okay, just admit it. It's a temple to Obama. So put a giant carved Obama head on top of it. You know, one with glowing green eyes like something out of a weird miniature golf course like the haunted trails on 79th Street in Harlem. So he can look down and flash his eyes when he's displeased and then we'll know. There should also be a gathering of simple, gentle tribesmen like the Eloi, the gentle sun people on the steps of it from the old Time Machine. You know that movie? Not the crappy new one, but the crappy old one with Rod Taylor. Anybody remember Rod Taylor? He wore an ascot. You know, ascots, they're not ties. They're like little scarves that you wear inside a shirt. Did you ever see anybody wear one? Except Charles Barkley? Okay, so my rant's over. Let's get on to politics. Rahm leaked his big plan to rebuild O'Hare Airport with $8.5 billion in contracts. United Airlines liked it. American hates it. Rahm pushes through. He's like your uncle who doesn't want to hear that the restaurant is closed and he's out there alone banging on the door and you're all in the parking lot saying, no, Uncle Rahm, no, it's not open. But it is. You know why? Because he's the mayor. And that $8.5 billion, that's not O'Hare improvement. Those are contracts. That's $8.5 billion in campaign cheese. So the next morning after he announced it, I was at Petros. You know that? It's like a diner right across the street from City Hall, and I ran into some aldermen. We were saying hi, and I ordered a Joe Barrios breakfast. You know what a Joe Barrios breakfast is over there? Poached eggs and soft bacon. And the aldermen were very excited, and they were like, $8.5 billion, $8.5 billion. They didn't really say it. They kind of hummed it. They were like trilling sounds coming out of their mouths. You know what? They know what Rahm's going to do with that money. He's going to parcel it out because he's running for re-election, and this is Chicago. And I said, what do you guys think you are? Some wise guys from Oak Brook getting a piece of the paving contracts? And one alderman said, no, we're the new wise guys. We've got people who want a piece of that. And Rahm wants people to vote for him because that's what he needs. Who doesn't want a piece of that? There's a mayoral campaign going on. Even while other people think if Jeannie Ives is a Madigan guy. No, she's not. It's an arm. It's a leg. It's city contracts, state contracts, deals, campaign lies, campaign commercials that are BS, all of that. You know what that is? That's politics. I'm John Cass, your mild-mannered columnist from the Chicago Tribune, and with me, as usual, is my podcast buddy, Jeff Carlin. And I can't wait to hear all about his Twitter wars with the Chicago Way listener. And then, of course, the spiritual sister, Christian McQuarrie. Listen, guys, remember this. Find us on iTunes. Write us some great kick-ass reviews about how cool this podcast is. And, you know, we'll see what we can do. Maybe your beaks will get wet, or maybe just a thank you, or I don't know what we'll do. Because, get real, you do something for us, we do something for you. And that's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
And now we have Christian McQuarrie, the Tribune editorial board columnist and editorial writer with us, Jeff. Is it nice to have Kristen here?
Always nice to have Kristen.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate
it. She's in hot demand, so it's good to have her.
I know. It's like the fight between us and John Williams.
I know. There was almost a fist fight the other day.
Oh, come on.
It's just this time of year. I'm in demand because it's election season, and then I'll go back to being a nobody. Ah. Nobody
yeah,
sent.
No. Yeah, no. Really? And then don't we have this thing this week at the...
We do.
What is it now?
Okay, so John doesn't know his schedule. He lives day to day. But if you like hearing us on the podcast, on Wednesday evening, we are going to be at the Chicago Athletic Association as part of the Lincoln Forum, which is a cool kind of evening fun discussion group. You buy a ticket and you get a few glasses of wine and you can talk to John. Me, who else is Ben Bradley of WGN is moderating, Mary Mitchell of the Sun-Times, and Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. So
yes.
We have the whole spectrum.
Worth the price of admission.
Oh, yes.
Now, and they charge tickets, but okay, I'm happy with what I'm getting paid. How about you?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You liar. I'm not getting paid. Are you getting paid?
Oh, no, not
okay,
for the
good.
Lincoln
All right,
Forum. I thought you meant my Tribune salary,
which has
remained unchanged in 6 years.
Thanks, Tronk. But no, I meant, you know, I was just trying to joke. We're not getting paid. We are not getting paid.
No,
right.
we will catch a cab together and wander over and have a few sips of wine that'll loosen us up. It'll be a good time. So if you're downtown.
At the Athletic Association, I would expect single malt scotch for me.
I'm sure that can be arranged.
And nice. Can I have a cigar?
Yeah, right. And this is the group that is Pat Brady.
Yes.
And Eric Edelstein, right? And
Tracy Slutskin
yep. put together a bipartisan think tape. Kind of
project.
They've done some good stuff. Let's look forward to this one.
So yes. We're going to have fun, but in the meantime, we're going to have fun today because, dude, Christian, what's up, man?
Well, we're rounding out the campaign season here, and races are tightening up. It's getting really interesting. There was a Democratic debate recently. I don't know if you watched it, but I thought it was... I've always wanted to do this where you ask the candidates everyday questions and to see if they are really relatable to... you know, peon voters such as ourselves, and they stumbled a little bit. You know, how much, I think they were asked, how much is a canister of peanut butter?
Yeah.
How much does a CTA monthly pass cost?
Yeah, Dan Biss didn't know that.
Yeah,
wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Mr.
Bernie Bro didn't know that.
Although I'll give it to him because for this reason only.
He said
$35 was the price of a monthly pass for CTA. Because he was guessing, because he's a Metro guy, because he said that my Metro is $55. And those are actual accurate numbers for a weekly pass.
Okay.
So, you know, he stumbled on that, and I'll give it to him. He was close enough. I mean,
I know, it's not, you don't sound exactly like George Will giving Ronald Reagan a break, but there's a certain, I'll let you do that because you're a friend, right?
Do you know how much peanut butter costs, Mr. Cass?
No, I don't. And you know what? Damn it, I don't care. I know what I know that, you know what? I don't know what it costs. And I don't know what a gallon of milk costs.
Yeah, because you don't do the grocery shopping.
I know T-bone steaks cost.
Right, I was going to say, you know everything at Casey's Market.
I know what lamb chops cost everywhere.
Yeah.
So, come on, you know?
I know. I love those Price is Right type questions because I would knock them out of the ballpark.
Well, do you remember when somebody asked George Bush, do you know what the price of milk is? And he didn't know, and it was like a big thing, the old man.
Right.
Wait, he's been... He ran the CIA. He was in. He's like a noblesse oblige guy. How does he know?
I know.
Servants for this.
But these, it was they. You know, because we keep having billionaires run, you have a candidate like this who is trying to be the everyman, and so he should know. If he is truly the everyman, then he should know how much peanut butter costs or a gallon of milk. Or, in my opinion, I mean,
Mr. Yeah. Biss was congratulated by some people that I know. Years ago, when he wanted to basically cut, he sponsored legislation to cut back the pensions of all those, you know, public workers unions that I wrote about last week in Janus. And is he getting enough of, I know, a spanking from the left on that?
He is, okay. But I think it's completely misguided.
Well,
he is now apologizing for sponsoring that bill.
That's pathetic.
And that bill was passed in December of 2013. We were then $100 billion in pension debt. It did not take away anyone's pension. It merely curbed the growth of pensions in that 3% compounded COLA, which we all know is unsustainable and overly generous.
Explained it to us on the podcast.
He did.
Exactly.
He did a great job.
So that bill was merely, it was something to save the pension systems, not to cut back on, not to take away anyone's pensions, but the union messaging has been very strong on that. And people actually believe that Daniel Biss was trying to, you know, steal the pension of some elderly state worker. And it's not true. And he should be standing up and defending that bill.
But the fact that he doesn't tells me that he's craven on these issues. And if he's governor, I might as well move to Indiana.
You have to have a spine. And I think that plays into some of the concerns about him that, you know, you have to have a spine if you're going to be governor and deal with organized labor. So I thought that was disappointing that he isn't defending his support for that bill.
Clearly, Kristen's in her policy, politic talk mode, not her, like, you know.
I heard her shift gears.
She shifted gears
Did
into
I?
That,
Did you
not
hear that?
Into the. Yeah, it went like, you know, like we're back in Catholic school. This is sixth grade. You know, we want to talk about the World Series and stuff. And she's like, click, you know, onto geography. All right. I've got some questions for you.
Okay, great.
You know, every the two things I ask people. Find us on iTunes, write us a kick-ass review, okay? And I haven't even gone there to see, but I'm going to see if you're on there. Boy, are you going to get a lot of love from this podcast. I know that it's illegal or something, but this is the Chicago
Well, it's just
way.
For broadcast. You're good. Chicago
Okay.
Way.
Number two, I ask people on Facebook, on both Facebook pages, where I'm the corrupt cop sitting with Rahm Emanuel and the other one with the Constitution, I ask people, ask questions, right? So here's one. For the podcast, from Mrs. Tina Savas, who I've known like since I was a little boy. I have this feeling Jeannie Ives was put up to take votes away from Rauner. What do you think?
Absolutely not. No, I mean, she was not put up. She actually is a very principled person and felt betrayed. I mean, everything that she says in some of those commercials is true. She felt that he betrayed conservatives, that he mocked social conservatives by signing that expansion of abortion bill, that he's just gotten way off track and is not what he sold himself to be. So she's running. She's still 20 points behind 3 weeks out. That's going to be
Some say.
That's going to be a steep hill to climb, but... That Madigan commercial, I think, is hurting her. There's a commercial where they actually pull audio from our editorial board meeting with
yes,
her, where she did kind of defend. She sort of.
I would say that what she was doing, now, again, please continue. I don't want to be Mr.
No,
John,
I don't want to use the word defend. That's, she wasn't defending Mike Madigan, but she was trying to show how Rauner is weak.
A one-trick pony. I mean, that was the thing.
Yes,
she was showing
exactly.
that his only defense for what he does is, well, I can't do anything because of this guy. And she was trying to highlight that that's not good enough.
We were asking him, why did you cut a deal with somebody on your back porch, you know, that whole business thing? Why did you do business, personal business at the governor's mansion or something? And he's like, because of Madigan. Why did you do this? Because of Madigan. Why did you do that? Madigan made me. Madigan. Every answer was Madigan. So she got up. She was like, come on, this is ridiculous. There he goes again. Criticizing Mike Madigan again. And his people, Pat Brady, are you listening? His people put that bite together, and I think it's kind of hurting her.
I think it's hurting her, too, because it's her own voice. And sitting across from them in that meeting, when she said a couple of those things, I went, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
Because she did say, Rauner called Madigan a crook, and she was trying to point out that that type of language is not helpful with someone that you have to negotiate with.
Mm-hmm.
But she in a way, defended Madigan.
There you
I guess
go,
I'm
picking
going
on
back
Mike
to
Madigan.
It. There you go, picking on Mike Madigan again.
Yeah.
And that's not what she meant.
Rauner's smart. He's never said, like, we've talked about this, but the word Donald Trump has never come out of his mouth. And
you think I got to write a column on this now? I mean, because I waited for the editorial board to write up, you know, this, she's not pro Madigan, but not that I'm telling anybody what to do, but I should worry about my own. Like, Kristen looking at me, like, I got to worry about my own column. I'm thinking, I'm throwing it up to you guys. Should I write a column saying this and this on this?
You were
issue?
In the room, so yes,
yeah.
I think you should set the record
yeah.
straight. And there's something else in that commercial where it talks about how she's getting Madigan money. And I think they're referring to the local 150.
Mm-hmm.
They've kind of teamed up with some of those conservative voices, and so some of that money might be, there is a partnership there.
Anybody follow
voices.
150 for years?
Yeah.
The most conservative labor politically, they used to, like, the guy who used to ran it loved, like, to have a gun or something. He was like pro 2A, and so am I. Baby, I'm all about it.
But they're also very
Trump, trying to take our guns, Trump.
Anti-right to work, and worked really hard against candidates who came out for right to work. So
yes, they did.
They still have their labor principles.
All right, here's another question. Let's see, from Tom Winicky. I wonder about rumors of Rauner planning to seek the 2020 Republican nomination for president by running as the anti-Trump candidate who will save our country from ruin. It might be in his playbook since he has little chance of reelection and loves being the center of attention. Yes? Maybe that's a rhetorical question, Mr. Rinicky. All right, here's another. Christina Arengis Morley weighs in on she picked on a point of contention that I had with Lauren Cohen the last week.
Oh, which one?
Lauren dissed on Paul Vallis, who I really like. And I was being, you know, I love you, Lauren, nothing there. But, you know, I was like, Mr. Like, I don't think that's correct or something. I was, like, officially polite. Jeff knew.
Agree
to
disagree.
He's going to blow up now, but I didn't. I was like, I disagree with you. All right, so here's her question. Lauren is right. Vallis was not a good fiscal manager. Why does he keep moving around the country?
I disagree with that, too. I mean, I don't know that he's been he's been fully vetted. He did run for governor in 2010, but it was a primary, and I don't know that he was fully vetted since then, and all the different places that he's gone. But I don't think there's anyone who can... I mean, he has taken bold moves, and he does understand budgeting. And when he left CPS, the pensions were funded. They were making pension payments. It was after he left that they took this 10-year hiatus, the Chicago Board of Education, of paying into the teacher pension fund. So, I don't know. I guess I'm mixed on it.
I think Vallis is a good manager, and he has the heart to run the city. I don't know how he's going to react to his recent personal, you know, issues at home. He lost his son. It's terrible.
Terrible news.
Terrible news. But we'll see. And in the meantime, we have a primary to deal with, and then we have also a temple of Obama to build. I'm thinking I said in the monologue, I'm thinking about maybe they should put his head on, you know, like a carving of his head, like a gigantic Obama head on top of the Jedi temple that they're building.
Okay.
And it would be glowing, like sort of like the Haunted Trails, you know, like something at the Haunted Trails golf course, mini golf.
In Bridgeview?
Or like the Drake has that light, that beacon light on it, and something like that.
Yeah, wait a second. Now, I'm not going to tell poor black people that they have to reconsider and love what's going to happen when they gentrify it out of their neighborhood, because that's what's going to happen. But I will suggest that $175 million on top of the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate that that park, all that parkland and the Obama golf course and all that represent, might be a little bit too much for something that's not a library. Anyone?
I just had this conversation with somebody recently. I like that the community is pushing back a little bit. And I think it's more, the gentrification issue is part of it. But that is not, that area is a bustling business district. And they're talking about disrupting quality of life for people and building a very large tower on what is now one of the gems of the South Side. So I like that they're pushing back. I mean, Cornell Drive, shutting that down would cause huge traffic concerns. And so the idea that Obama's kind of pushing back and saying, oh, stop listening to those critics. Who doesn't want my magnificent tower of, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
I don't want it.
It's okay, not a library.
It's not a library. I mean, what are you going to have, like animatronic Obamas walking around talking about White Sox players he couldn't name when he was on TV?
In the mom jeans? No, I mean, so jeans? First African-American yeah, president, one. It's going to be a draw. I'm glad it's here. New York City wanted it, too. And so
But they have the real library. They have the why aren't there any books in this light? Why aren't there any, like,
well, there,
what is it, like, tchotchke?
I think there's going to be a smoker's room.
What?
There's going to be a smoker's room.
With the Marlboro Reds?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, here's another one. Do we need Rahm Emanuel, somehow the story got out, Tribune broke it, that he was going to spend $8.5 billion on the airport to expand the airport. And then it turns out, American Airlines is like, not so fast. We don't like this. Rahm says he's pushing ahead. So I was at City Hall the next day outside, you know, having a cup of coffee with somebody. And aldermen were talking. And they were loving it because they loved the idea that they're going to get some money.
Mm-hmm.
And jobs. I said, hey, man, what do you think? You guys are a bunch of Chinatown wise guys. You're not going to get any. What are you going to get? Some contracts here? And they said, yeah, they will.
Of course, so
because a lot of concrete.
Because Rahm's running for mayor, right?
Exactly. This is you can't run for mayor in the city and win without huge backing from organized labor. And this is what they want. This is a huge construction project. This is jobs. This is work. This is what else do we have? Look, I'm not saying I'm in favor of it. We can't even finish the flyover by Navy Pier. But that's what this is all about. It has much more to do with the election than the need to expand O'Hare.
Jeff Carlin, do you concur, sir?
Yes, I absolutely concur. It's got playbook written all over it. Here's a great big thing we're going to do. Oh, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. And then, you know, now we're going to find out. We're going to spend the next 30 years digging into this deal and find out so-and-so's brother got the concrete, so-and-so's brother got the concessions, so-and-so's
Rahm
brother.
Rahm didn't know anything about it. What do you mean? What do you mean? I didn't know.
And he'll be long gone, and we'll be dealing with some other Democrat flack.
Somebody who might be long gone, Jeff Carlin, is a guy that came up through the system, never acted like one of those phony reformers. He was always about bowing to Mike Madigan at the proper time. He's now the chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party, and he's also the assessor. And he was in court. Joe Berrios people were in court saying, please, those lawyers who practice reducing your taxes and go before Joe Berrios have to be able to give him campaign money.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that kind of bribery? What is
you
that?
You know, so here's the minute. Here's the one little issue where I am going to be on Joe Berrios' side.
Good. Okay, good.
That's what campaign contributions are. It's, to me, the lawyers giving money to Joe Berrios and then in exchange getting tax reductions for their clients is just a different color of gray than ComEd giving tons of money to state lawmakers and then being allowed to raise rates, or the medical society, or trial lawyers, and then getting legislation that favors them. So that's what campaign contributions are. They're just kind of they're mini bribes, and I don't really it's protected speech according to the U.S. Supreme Court. So why not? Why should that particular arrangement be outlawed?
I'm not going to say anything, but I think in a way she bothers me because I think she's right. Jeff? Jeff's just nodding his head. I think she's right, and I want to apologize for snorting and breathing into the microphone.
That other noise is John dragging on an e-cigarette.
I was not. Jeff, it's illegal.
Jeez.
I mean,
do that.
We're in front of a fan pulling out the window.
What? Speak about what happens on this podcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, people say stuff, and then it comes back to them, like whatever Jeff was making up about me and an e-cigarette.
I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not waving away vape over here.
So Jeff finally jumped into our shoes, Kristen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great.
Last week, a reader, devoted reader of the column and of your columns and editorials, and a listener of this podcast, carefully listened and heard Jeff Carlin say something that bothered the guy, and he started a Twitter war with Jeff.
He did, yes.
That was so awesome, and he apologized.
Well, and the apology wasn't, I mean, I didn't think it was necessary. I mean, it wasn't like he attacked me personally.
No, of course not.
We just differed in opinion on how money should be spent. And
you said something.
People.
Did you say
I
something?
I said the NRA was too powerful as a lobbying group.
He said the Chicago Way, John Cass, Jeff Carlin, you said the NRA is too powerful, okay?
Yeah.
And I would never say that because I believe in the Second Amendment and the First. And you can't have one without the other, it's my opinion.
Yeah.
But I threw Jeff under the bus right there publicly and said something like, I didn't say that or something, didn't I?
Yeah, who said that?
Who said that, which was kind of a passive-aggressive, neutral dumping under the bus thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Jeff.
That's okay.
I did see that exchange, and he definitely shoved that comment right into your lap.
How do you like getting that now? It's the best, better thing.
It's a badge of honor. It's like the Boy Scouts. I've got my Twitter war badge.
Did you like that? Because he was it wasn't that he was personally attacking you. He was a nice guy. I forgot Derek, or I forgot to call his name. But clearly pointed, and that's what we want, right? We want debate.
Absolutely.
So please say some more things that so you know how we feel when they actually go personal on you.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I know. Yeah.
I had a little, when we, see, you sit in front of this microphone, you just feel like I'm just chatting with you guys.
Yeah, right.
You guys. So I just finished my share of endorsements for the Tribune Editorial Award. I spend weeks on these, interviewing candidates, writing them up. It's a big project. I've been working a lot of weekends, but I'm now done. However, something happens every election season with me when I'm in the thick of it, and I start having dreams about
this
is
the election.
So awesome. Yeah.
Mike Madigan shows up in my dreams, okay, in weird ways. Not that way.
Dressed?
He is dressed, yes.
Okay,
sometimes in like shorts and socks and sandals mowing his lawn. But this happened nights ago. I wake up at midnight. I'm kind of sleepwalking. This was reported to me later. I yank the curtains open in the bedroom and I kind of shake my husband and say, "How could you endorse those candidates in Kane County? I can't believe you did that." And then I like stomped over to my side of the bed. And he like grabbed me by the shoulders and said, "I'm not who you think I am. Go back to sleep." And I said, "Okay." And then I went back to sleep.
Oh my God!
Wow.
It's happening. So it's almost.
Man.
I have 3 more weeks of cuckoo crazy, Kristen, and then I'll calm down. I hope.
Why is that? Because the pressure is so you get hit on. Okay, for those of you who don't know what happens here, Kristen and others have to sit down and listen to the pleas of people who want to be politicians.
Right? I talk to the politicians so you don't have to.
And then she has to answer her phone because she doesn't, you know, she answers her phone, and or walk down the street and run into people who she knows, who know the politicians, and then they're like, quiet, like subtly, quietly hinting. I'm just projecting here because I know what happens to me
right.
on this. That's what happens to me. Like a guy says, I really have to talk to you. And I'm like, okay. And I go, are you in the suburbs now? And he goes, no, because I'm in the city. I really got to talk to you at Petros. So I go down there on a day I didn't have to go down there. And it was at City Hall where I at least got the stuff from the alderman about they thought they were Oak Brook Wise guys on the contracts. And but this guy's telling me all about, I'm like, what is it? What do you want to talk about? Oh, he's talking to me about a candidate. And I'm like, really, man?
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Bummer. Like, really, you drag you all the way down there. Yeah.
Now I hate that candidate. Just for that reason.
Whoever's,
you know,
listening.
Why didn't you just say something like a man and talk, or woman, or not gender, or what? No offense to anyone.
Yeah, everyone's your best friend all of a sudden around this time. Or not. I got chewed out yesterday by a candidate who did not get our endorsement. And, you know, I just let her talk, and she wanted to know why, and I kind of explained, but, you know, it's just people who seek our endorsement are very disappointed if they don't get it, which I guess is a good thing.
Well, one thing I'm glad about is that personally, Bob Rita, how you doing, Bob? Didn't get the endorsement. Mary Calvin, because I always like to pick one, you know, liberal with union backers that hate me to support, you know, like, and Mary Calvin got the endorsement, so that's good.
Sure.
But the other thing is, there was an editorial last week on John Cullerton, and I thought was one of the best at laying out the issue, where Cullerton acts like he, you know, part of the Me Too movement, and then backs a guy who was... Can you explain that to me?
Yeah. So, in spring...
In case, just as a person who may have read it.
Talk is cheap, right, in Springfield. So you have John Cullerton, as soon as this story came out about one of his members and a member of his leadership team, Ira Silverstein, who is a state senator representing the northwest side of Chicago and some of the north suburbs, had sort of this very open, flirtatious relationship, that's what I'll call it, with an activist who wanted a bill passed, and he was the sponsor.
Come on.
Oh, yes. But
he was like a creepy old man.
It was super creepy.
Young
but she was kind of eating it up, too, by the looks of some of the emails. Mm. Now, she has since said she was kind of disgusted by it, but he was sponsoring her bill. And anyway, she filed a sexual harassment complaint against him, which then sat for a year because there was no one filling that position. Anyway, this is an easy race for John Cullerton to sit out, right? Ira Silverstein has three other opponents in the Democratic primary. They're all quite qualified and don't have like sexual harassment cloud hanging over their heads. But Cullerton is not only backing him, he's all in. He has written him so far $100,000 in
that
campaign.
That was something.
It's a lot of money for a state Senate race. Helping him with advertisements and at the same time trying to pretend like he is
Me Too.
Yeah. So to me, it's just...
It was an excellent editorial calling out hypocrisy. And another question for both of you. I guess the Me Too movement now is really nothing. To me, it means nothing. If I don't see Me Too people in Blue Island for Mary Calvin, if I don't see Me Too people at outside Mike Madigan's office every day, having, you know, with Now, Emily's List, all of you, you listening to me? All of you. Then I get the idea that really what you are just weaponized gender warriors for the left. Because if you're not holding Democrats to the same thing, then really all you are just hacks. Is that wrong of me to think that way? Not that I want to think that way.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, do you know how silent my Twitter has been from all of those progressive liberal voices, men and women, who go out there and march and do all this stuff and are quiet as church mice when it's Mike Madigan or John Cullerton getting...
Put your pink hats on, boys. Your little fuzzy pink hats, you pathetic weasels. And do a job. But you don't, right? They have nothing
they
to say.
They are quiet. They are so quiet.
SEIU, thank you. Oh, or in whoever.
Yeah.
Right?
And can you imagine if the tables were turned and this was someone... And I actually had a Republican friend who's friends with a lot of these Democrats on the... on the in the House say, you know, if this were Bruce Rauner or something, they would be having a field day. They would be marching. They would be outside his home. But nope, just total hypocrisy when it's one of their own.
Where if in a neutral world, Jeff Garland and Kristen McQuarrie, where would they be protesting?
They would be vocal. They would be out there. They would be tweeting about it. They would be discussing it. They would be confronting Mike Madigan. They would be organizing a protest of some sort. But they're not. They're just, it doesn't matter if it's one of their own.
So in other words, Me Too is bullshit in Illinois. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's true. You know, and you're not going to hear that anywhere else.
No.
Except here on the Chicago Way. Are you? Really? Have you heard it anywhere else, Jeff Carlin?
No.
Sorry, Ben.
No, that's all right.
That's going to be the headline.
Yep.
Me Too is... Did you
no,
say...
You're not
did
use
he
that
swear?
Word.
A little bit.
But you're just going to leave it.
Yeah.
But you're not going to highlight it in the copy.
Unless you want me to.
No, I don't. But I don't mind cutting... But, you know, this is a podcast. We can talk.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm still trying to... Did he say BS? Or
did
he... Okay.
I said bull crap.
Okay.
It bothers me.
Yeah, you know, it bothers me too.
Because the issues are like, it's like kissing Harvey Weinstein's butt for years and then pretending you're against it.
Mm-hmm. And even some of the people, so one of my dear friends, Carrie Lester, who worked at the Daily Herald until recently, wrote a book called No, My Place. And it's kind of just chronicles all these different women in Springfield, most of them Democrats, who have confronted this type of just boorish behavior. And you would think they would be the first to speak out and defend this woman who left Mike Madigan's campaign operation because she was being harassed. Not a word.
Right.
None of them. Some of them, one of them I even pointed out, contributed to Senator John Cullerton's political action committee that then gave money to Ira Silverstein, this woman who is featured in the book. I mean, I give up.
I'm still waiting for, who's the Shaw de Kramer?
Shaw de Kramer.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for investigative journalists to find out what his lobbying contacts are with little villages, like including Blue Island, Bobby Rita. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The mayor there just told me a week ago, so ago, I did a column on it and on Mary Calvin's race, and he said he's no longer lobbying, mm-hmm. you know, because the mayor of Blue Island is opposed to Rita's reelection. But I just don't see any consistency. But what is
maybe it's just us, John?
Is it consistency? Is the hobgoblin of little minds or something like that? Remember that?
Yeah.
Anyone? All right. So what happened? Who's going to win? Is Kagi going to win, beat Joe Berrios?
I mean, stay tuned for another installment of that race and the female candidate, Andrea Rayla, trying to get on
God,
the ballot.
Get off the ballot.
Oh, see, I want her to... She has every right to be on the ballot. She is a legitimate candidate. She has more experience than both of them. I know nobody wants her because she splits up the anti-Berrios vote.
Good point.
But... she has gotten hamstrung by this tight time schedule, which by design strings along challengers. You notice none of the incumbents really have trouble staying on the ballot. It's people like her.
How you doing, Mike Casper? Yeah.
So,
right?
I like Mike.
I do too, but come on, let's be real.
Nobody knows election law better than he does. And so if he's on the other side of the table at those State Board of Elections hearings, you're in trouble. But she is probably... going to be on the ballot, but then as people show up, there will be a little note saying your vote for her won't count. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that we're at this point where the ballot is printed and we don't know if, you know, and the courts haven't yet ruled. But I feel for her because she is a legit candidate who is not going to be able to pull it off.
Who's going to win the gubernatorial primary on the Democratic side, Mr. Carlin?
I think Kennedy's going to pull it out.
Wow, that's a bold prediction.
Yeah. Where'd you hear that?
Well, I, you know,
where'd you hear it? Come on.
Where'd I hear it?
Yeah.
It's his gut.
Where did I hear it?
I said that last
I know
week.
I think more I'm seeing it, more he's appealing more to people who don't want to vote for a billionaire and who don't want to vote for a guy who doesn't know the Metro affairs or what have you. Yeah, I think he's going to pull this out, because like my aunt, you know, she's an older voter. She loves Kennedy. I mean, but she's a lot of her progressive friends, they love Kennedy. They like him. They think he's genuine, and they think he is, you know, get the best interests of everybody in mind.
Well, he needs the South Side.
Yeah.
And on the South Side, there used to be on the, you know, with the fireplace where you have in the. The fireplace doesn't work, and you have the crinkly cellophane in the fireplace that goes around and around. Anyone know those? I guess I do. I'm too old. But you have crinkly cellophane, and someone turns it on.
Right.
And that's your fireplace.
Yeah. Colored cellophane.
And above that, on the mantelpiece, there would be a picture of John Cardinal Cody and John Kennedy. And I think there are people still who vote, who are of a senior age, who will vote in the African American wards. Maybe they wouldn't have Cardinal Cody, they'd have Martin Luther King. And on the South Side, on the Southwest Side, Kristen, do you see those people going for Pritzker or for Kennedy, or do you see them just going for Gene Rauner? I mean, Gene Ives.
Well, on the Democratic side, I still think Pritzker is probably going to be victorious. He has definitely had some stumbles, but all in all, for as long as he's been out there, it's been an almost flawless campaign. And so I still think that having the machine in a Democratic primary will help him. So I would say Pritzker is probably going to win that primary. And on the Republican side, the only kind of hope that Jeannie Ives has at this point in beating Bruce Rauner, because she is pretty far behind, there might be a Trump factor with her, where even the polls aren't picking up on people who won't admit that they're voting for her,
right,
but are going to vote for her. Because she has been very strident, and she did offend a lot of people with some of her commercials.
That one with the
transgender person.
Transgender,
yeah.
Person with the beard. You know what it did? It seemed like it was the reaction to it, because given the establishment Republican reaction, was to shame anyone who might like her by using that. So in other words, if you like Jeannie Ives and you hate hate guys using girls' washrooms, how dare you hate guys using girls' washrooms, or
mm-hmm,
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the media twittery thing, because it works, particularly on broadcast hosts doing talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work on columnists as much, but it still has an effect. But there might be a Trump that kind of, you're not going to shame me out of this, because we know what happened. Sanctuary City and abortion. And that was a deal breaker for conservatives.
Absolutely. And he didn't have to do it. And so it just questions your judgment and his leadership ability and his spine that he did. But if she is going to win, it will be because people have been kind of holding back and not wanting to participate in these polls, because the polls do show her significantly behind at this point.
Well, I don't believe in the polls, because we haven't run any. Tribune hasn't run them. And everyone who's running polls are giving them to me and to you and everyone else to show their point of view.
Right.
Right?
They're
so
coming
I don't
from
trust
a partisan
them.
Camp.
One last question before we sign off, and that is, when does the third videotape hit? As everyone's talking about it in political world, that there's another videotape out there, and it's going to drop on Pritzker. Is this the dissing of Obama videotape? What is it?
Gosh,
you know,
I don't know.
The Blagojevich, not videotape, Blagojevich.
The audio, the
audio.
Phone call.
Mm-hmm. Phone call.
I don't know. See, are you confident that there is a third? Because I heard that was it. That what's out there is...
That was it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm confident in this, that black ministers throughout the South and West sides of Chicago are not going to be hurting for cash as long as Mr. Pritzker's in the running.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just part of the game. And you know what that is? It's called politics.
Dream.
Joining us now is actually a gentleman by the name, or goes by the moniker of Mr. Health Insurance, Mark Gerda, who's the president of Castle Group Health. And he's, we wanted to bring him in too, because there's, last week we kind of ran into this thing with our friend Lauren Cohn, who's been subject to the abuse, as she would like to call it, the Obama healthcare exchange here in Illinois. And we know healthcare is changing rapidly, and everybody's kind of got one way or another, they see it. And I wanted to bring you in to, just to give us your take on the future of healthcare, especially within, in light of this Amazon deal that might be coming to a computer near you for healthcare. And so, Mark, I really want to start with, what do you think of what's happening in Illinois? I mean, is Illinois' health insurance system in peril, as it seems to be, from my point of view, because I see a lot of companies are leaving, a lot of people are struggling. My better half, Christine, she had trouble finding health insurance until she got a job from a company that would pay her a decent wage. So where do we stand here in Illinois?
So each state is a little bit different, and Illinois is probably on the lower end of being bad, but it's by far not the worst state out there. When you look at insurance, you have to look at it as a three-headed animal. You have Medicare, Medicaid, and the private sector. And I believe that the Affordable Care Act was an outstanding effort at trying to fix the runaway private sector health costs that started out this century from 2000 till 2010. I happened to sort of vindicate Nancy Pelosi when she made that statement back in 2010, saying we had to pass it to find out what was in it. I think what she really was saying is, look, we have to pass this and then make adjustments. I am not an apologist for the ACA. I absolutely believe that the law is it's a giant balloon of taxes and regulations that cost a lot of money and provide not enough people the benefits. When you were talking about the problem in getting care or the value here in Illinois, you're talking about the private sector having access to providers. Here in the Chicago area, you cannot buy at any cost an individual health plan, a PPO, that would allow you to go to Rush or Northwestern or Advocate. These are huge systems. As carriers have disappeared from the Illinois market, I believe we had 8 or 9 offering individual coverage back in 2014. Now you're talking about 3, but really only 1. You've got Blue Cross, which offers a PPO and a couple of different HMOs, and then you've got Cigna and AM Better that offer narrow network HMOs. So it's the access to providers, not necessarily the access to insurance, that is a significant problem for the individual or those without group insurance.
What is someone supposed to do? Because those of us who have insurance, who have jobs, have insurance. But, you know, I'm looking in my friend's eyes and she doesn't have, and, you know, she has bad insurance. She can't get into a good hospital. I mean, it's kind of, you know, I don't want to sound like a Bernie bro, okay? Or, you know, God forbid, one of those Obama people loving the ACA. But still, I'm thinking, what are they supposed to do, man?
Yeah, and I think you really, and you brought up the Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, J.P. Morgan triumvirate, another three-headed giant monster of successful businesses that have now come out and publicly said they're going to try and find an efficiency. I think they'll have trouble being a disruptor in the system. But I think what's happening, and you're seeing it both in the Republicans and the Democrats, I see both parties now coming to the conclusion that the Affordable Care Act and the time bomb that exists in it for Medicare funding from the federal government, that a revamp is needed. And so, again, take a look at those three sectors, Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance. the private insurance area, especially in those smaller areas, floundering. And those, everyone in private insurance is paying much more. Let me give you a sort of a little relative simile here. Everyone gets those 20% coupons from Bed Bath & Beyond. Now, if everybody used those coupons all the time, Bed Bath & Beyond wouldn't exist. Medicare and Medicaid get discounted care. As those rolls increase at discounted care, the burden of cost to drive what is new drugs, new technology, higher cost, oversupply of every hospital needing to have every machine, that's falling to the private sector. If you look at both Chris Kennedy and J.B. Pritzker's plan, they're saying, come on, let's get the private sector into the buy Medicaid for all type of thing. Or Bernie Sanders saying buy Medicare. You're right. In Illinois, if you're an individual, your access to providers is limited. And the Affordable Care Act did a great job, I think, for those between 125% of poverty and 200%. But the cost to the rest of the sector has been unbalanced and needs a significant adjustment.
Well, how do, what's the adjustment? I mean, how do we fix something like that in a state like Illinois?
Well, I don't think the problem with fixing something on a state basis is like the argument of raising sales tax or specific sin taxes, because people jump over the state lines. If indeed Illinois tried to do something, that doesn't mean that Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, or Missouri would. And so you would then drive competition across state lines. I believe the solution has to be federal. I think, you know, what I think, and I want to just tell the audience, I think the private health care system, that third tier of private system where all the profit and where everything comes out that drives innovation, I think that should have been addressed. And everyone right now, I think, is trying to move into the other two groups. What eventually I think needs to happen is some sort of massive expansion of the VA on a federal level that drafts in the Medicaid from all the other states. I don't think this can be solved on a state level. It will always go down to the lowest common denominator. The Trump plans for allowing insurance over state lines, again, you're going to just drive out who still exists down to the lowest common denominator. That's a predictable outcome. I wish I had a great answer, but there's all this forensic evidence that's going on around us that tells us that the Affordable Care Act, as it stands, is not a sustainable entity. And it's up for debate how it's going to be redirected. Well, I'm sure it'll be kicked the can down the road.
If you're a young person, you know, those of us who are old will die as, you know, maybe you don't need death panels like Zeke Emanuel, but it'll be, you can't get coverage or something, and that'll do the trick for a lot of us. But for, you know, the 20-somethings, 22, you know, millennials, young people, they're looking forward to what? State, a national, what you're describing is nationalized health care.
Well, what I'm describing
I have to go to Mike Madigan. You know, if I need that hip, I got to go to Mike Madigan to get, hey, Mike, can you see if I could get, can you get me, you know, farther ahead in line?
Yes and no. I think that you need a federal plan to help those that are less fortunate. I believe the ACA failed those on the lower scale. It failed at many levels. If indeed you were looking strictly at need, you talk about those that have need, and what we're addressing is insurance. How insurance has sta- state, and look, this is my industry, and this is how I make my living. But I think they've overreached, and I think they've done the public a disservice. I do not know why a federal system to care for those that are unable to care for themselves wouldn't be laid out. It would be a far more effective system to let private business generate profit and innovation while letting the public sector take over on those that are unable to care for themselves. Now, both Chris Kennedy's and J.B. Pritzker's health plan are kick-the-can-down-the-road solutions, and it will drive up the cost in Illinois for those that are paying for insurance. But for those on the lower end, it will actually lower the cost. I think a federal system would be a better way, because the ACA is never going away. At this point, the subsidized healthcare system is too ingrained. If indeed the last chance was last year. If it happened a year from now and they actually got rid of these subsidies, you would have a significant problem in the healthcare system with maybe as many as 50 or 60 million people uninsured. That's unacceptable. You can't have 20% of your population walking around at risk and not paying into the system somehow. I don't have the answer. I'm just looking at the forensic points that tell me that both, whether you're left or right or center, there is a common agreement that didn't exist 18 months ago that the Affordable Care Act, as it stands, is not sustainable.
Mark Gerda, thanks so much. I appreciate the insight on that. That's a great analysis of a super complex issue that I couldn't even begin to wrap my head around.
Very clear. Very clear and concise. Thank you, Mark. And
well, thanks for having me on, guys.
My only observation is that anyone over 70, 10 years from now, will be turned into crackers. Because that's probably the only way.
They're well, people. That would be me.
Soylent Green, my friend. That's our future.
All right.
See you, Mark. Thank you.
And Mark, if we want to learn more,
MrHealthInsurance.com or HealthInsure, I-N-S-U-R-E, com.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
And so for Jeff Carlin of WGNAM Radio, producer of the Ro Khan and Anna Devlani Show, and for Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, and for Mr. Health Insurance himself, Mark Gerda, this is John Cass. Remember, find us on iTunes, write the damn review and say how kick-ass the Chicago Way podcast is. Find us some sponsors, too, okay, so we can stay on the air. And I'm not asking. I'm just throwing this out.
Hey, listeners, do all of the work for us, please.
And because you know why we want you to do that? Because this is the Chicago Way.